Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to First Bite, the Detroit Lions preview podcast for Pride of Detroit, your SB Nation blog for the Detroit Lions. My name is Jeremy Reisman. I am the managing editor over at Pride of Detroit. You can find me at Detroit Online on Twitter. And we're ready for another week. It's been a long week, even though it's literally been a short week for Lions fans. We're moving on to Minnesota, though. We're not talking about the Packers game anymore. It might slip up here and there, but I'm going to try to cut it off if it does. So guests, be forewarned, if you talk about the Packers game, I'm going to cut you off. This week is the Vikings game. We're going to talk all Vikings. With us today, we have Ryan Matthews back with us. Ryan, how are we doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm not going to talk about the Packers game, even though I'm talking about it right now.
Have you gotten out of your Radiohead phase? Because I know that's a dark road down there.
No, I'm sufficiently down the rabbit hole at this point. I think a general malaise has been a way to describe this entire week since Monday.
Fair enough. And to give us the Vikings perspective on things, our good friend Arif Hassan is with us at Arif Hassan NFL on Twitter. He is the writer for The Athletic Minnesota when it comes to all things Vikings. Arif, how are we doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you two doing?
Good. Better. Getting there.
Working on it.
Fair enough. It starts with the mindset.
Exactly. But let's just jump right into it. I want to talk about the Vikings. I want to talk about the offseason that they've had, because to me, it looked like it was kind of a fairly straightforward offseason. The plan on defense was keep as many pieces together as humanly possible with the salary cap. And then on offense, it's just fix the offensive line. And that's about it. Is that a right read on what the Vikings offseason?
Yeah, that was the plan going in, and for the most part, they executed. So,
yeah. Well, let's talk about some of those changes that they've made on the offensive line in particular, because they went and get Josh Klein in free agency. They draft Garrett Bradbury with their first round pick. They get a new offensive line coach. They bring in Gary Kubiak. What's different this year? What has succeeded? What hasn't succeeded with that offensive line?
Well, I think first and foremost, grabbing the offensive line coach, Rick Dennison, who, you know, worked with Gary Kubiak, that might have been the most important thing. You know, I think recently when we've seen offensive lines turn around, the Colts, the Seahawks, a couple years ago, the Patriots, a lot of it's been driven by the offensive line coach. So losing Tom Cable for Mike Solari, losing, I forget whoever the Colts had, and then also bringing Dante Scarnecchia back for the Patriots. All of that led to pretty significant changes in the offensive line. And I think for the Vikings, the same thing was a possibility. And right now, the offensive line is playing a lot better. It's not playing well, but it's playing a lot better, especially in the running game. And I think a lot of that has to do with Kubiak. A lot of that has to do with Dennison. And the fact that even if individual offensive linemen aren't run blocking well, the scheme kind of creates these opportunities. You know, they are pass blocking a lot better. They're creating better help situations for their pass protectors. And that's despite the fact that, you know, center Garrett Bradbury, up until the last two games, has been fairly disappointing. Guard Pat Elflein, who was recently a center last year, has not been all that great in pass protection. We've seen improvements in play at the right guard position. That's where they brought in free agent Josh Klein. We've seen improvements in play the left tackle position and the right tackle position. So I think a lot of that has to do with the offensive line coaching, which tends to get, I think, under-discussed. But yeah, they made you know, some changes, some acquisitions. They moved a guy from center to left guard. They signed a guard in free agency, and then they got a little bit of development out of their young right tackle.
And so that's interesting, Arif. You know, we talk about the improvements made to the offensive line, whether or not it's been investing draft capital or it's been investing just actual capital through free agency. And it seemed like the beginning of the season where it was paying dividends was in the run game. And Dalvin Cook got off to a really hot start. And I mean, he was averaging like 5.2 yards per carry, 7.7 yards per carry, 6.8 yards per carry. I mean, he was just... he was getting a lot of chunk plays. And but at the same time, we saw Kirk Cousins on the other side struggle. Like, at this point, what do you think like the Vikings' identity is on offense? Like, do they want to run the football? Do they want to try and keep Stephon Diggs in town and have him not traded? Like, what's the plan? Like, what is the way that the Vikings are best operating on offense?
Well, I think the way they envision it is that it's very adaptable and flexible week by week, game plan by game plan, and responsive to game flow. I think that they want to say, hey, when we're up, we can run the ball into the clock. When we're down, we can make explosive plays through the air. If there are some weaknesses, you know, in the secondary, we can target that. If they can't, you know, defend the intermediate zones, we can attack that. That's, I think, the way that they've wanted to approach things. You know, I know they talk a lot about the run game, but I think they've wanted to approach this offseason based on the way they've kind of invested and, you know, worked on play calling and stuff like that to be that kind of multi-capable offense that can attack weaknesses and have all of those areas be kind of strengths. But, you know, as we've kind of moved forward, like you've said, you know, they've been a better run offense than they have been a passing offense until very recently. The problem is that the passing offense is very responsive to the level of the defense that they've been playing. So when they play really bad defenses, they actually play better than elite offenses tend to against bad defenses, especially through the air. When they play really good defenses, they tend to play worse than some of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL do against bad defenses. So it's really kind of sensitive to the level of the opponent. That's not where they want to be, obviously. And then kind of throughout all of that, they have trusted that run game to produce. There's only really been one game where they've been kind of frustrated in the running game. That's the Chicago game. And so they've been kind of going to that. And so if you adjust for things like game situation and game script and stuff like that, you know, they're one of the more run heavy teams in the NFL. You know, they're not going to touch the Seahawks or anything like that, but they're, you know, fourth or fifth most run heavy behind like the Ravens and the Seahawks and so on. So they are kind of a quote unquote run first team. I think they'd like to get out of that a little bit, despite what Mike Zimmer says publicly about, you know, running the ball a lot. And they would like to be just kind of responsive and flexible, and they're not quite there yet.
Yeah. And do you think that's the case just because they invested all that money into Kirk Cousins? They have maybe arguably the best passing weapons in terms of receiving options in the NFC North, maybe in all of the NFC, maybe in all of football. Like, I'm really high on Adam Thielen. Stephon Diggs is a great player. Kyle Rudolph, like, or are they just kind of frustrated that 2017 Case Keenum isn't walking through that door?
I think, you know, they expected, hey, you know, we bring in a quarterback that is like objectively, qualitatively better than Case Keenum, the passing offense should improve. And, you know, that's like a fair, bare bones, simple assumption. But like, Keenum was built off of all of these like random flukes that, you know, the ball bounced the right way and stuff. And they recognize that during the season, like Zimmer would like publicly say stuff like that. And so, you know, the expectation that it would just kind of improve, I think, kind of did them in terms of what they wanted. I don't know that they're pressured by the fact that they've got such talented receivers, which, you know, I do think it's like the best receiver duo in the NFC North. I think, you know, in the NFC in total, you could maybe make the case for, you know, Tampa Bay's Mike Evans and Chris Godwin as being better. But then other than that, so you've got these super talented receivers. I don't know that they feel as much pressure to use them, but rather they would just like to be flexible. And obviously there's been this kind of tiff that people have been talking about, frustration in the locker room. Stephon Diggs intentionally misses a practice and so on. And you feel like maybe that puts pressure on them, but it really kind of doesn't. It just so happened that Stephon Diggs goes off, you know, the game after that he expresses his frustration. But that's because he's a super talented player, and super talented players just happen to go off at times. So I don't know that the locker room frustrations or anything have forced them to pass the ball more or anything like that. I think it's more that they would just like not to be bottlenecked by a particular type of defense that would take them out in the playoffs. They don't want a matchup to ruin them, so they'd like to be flexible, multi-capable. But I don't really think the fact that they invested so much actual money into Adam Thielen and Kirk Cousins and Stephon Diggs is actually kind of pushing the way they designed their offense. Otherwise, they might have even kept DeFilippo, who threw the ball more than anyone.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to talk a little bit more about Kirk Cousins, and that might be a topic that you're probably sick of discussing, but I'm just curious as to your overall thoughts on his play, because obviously it's been highly publicized, his play. But when you look at the stats, you know, he's top five in passer rating, top 10 in, you know, I mean, he's basically top 10 in every single stat that you can look at. But if you kind of go based on the national narrative, it seems like people are upset that he's still the quarterback, that he's getting all this guaranteed money. Where do you fall on how he's playing so far in his second year in Minnesota?
This is not too different than 2015 with Washington. I mean, he was like a top five passer by basically every passing metric, and everyone was like, yeah, he's not that good. Mm-hmm. And I get it. I think that there's something there where I don't like talking about like stat chasing or padding stats or anything like that, because I think it's actually very difficult to do that in football. Like, there's not really a Rajon Rondo where you can just like chase, you know, empty stats. But I think that the statistics that point to efficient play tend to appear in situations where the game kind of doesn't matter. And so when you take a look at high leverage situations, you know, he tends to, I'm not going to say fall apart, but he tends to underperform relative to, you know, what the statistics would indicate about that. And in particular this year, you know, he's been able to feast on some really bad defenses. 31st in adjusted net yards per attempt, 28th, 27th, 26th, I think. So he's had like a murderer's row of really soft secondaries to go up against. And when he goes up against a defense that's sixth or seventh, and that's, I think, the Packers and Chicago respectively, or, you know, vice versa, you know, he's crumbled. And I think that that's what people are responding to. Hey, you know, this is an important game and he crumbles. Hey, you know, this is a good defense and he crumbles. And I think some of that is narrative and some of that is factual, and it's kind of difficult to kind of separate some of these things. But when you get into situational football, like 2-minute drills or even 4-minute drills or third and long, in high leverage situations, he tends to perform much worse than his statistical averages. Whereas, you know, he's been able to increase his completion percentage and yards per attempt in those 2-minute situations while still losing the game. And so very often, you know, in a 2-minute situation, he'll throw to, you know, a receiver open in the middle of the field where there's no defenders near him, because the defenders would be very happy if you threw to the receiver in the middle of the field in a 2-minute drill and you don't have any timeouts left. It's like that, where it's a bunch of actually empty yards. And I don't think it's because he's chasing these statistics. I think he has the same progression and same response to defenses every single down, every single play, without paying attention to the situation or the context. So the coverage says, I throw here, so I'll throw here, without really processing that, hey, it's 3rd and 15, there's a minute and 45 seconds left and you need to score a touchdown. It's instead, the coverage says, I throw here, so I throw here. So he makes the same throw on 1st and 10 as he does 2nd and 7, as he does 3rd and 15.
It's a very complicated long answer for probably a more complicated question than I intended. I think there's a lot to unpack there, and it's very interesting because, yeah, I think you look at the Kirk Cousins narratives and they're all over the place. And there's the whole thing about him, you know, not having confidence to throw into windows and too much hesitation on his part. But what you brought up kind of delves into the complications there. It's not as simple as something like that, but I think it's probably time we move on to the defense a little bit. Ryan, yeah, you got a question on the defense?
Not in particular. I mean, I think with their defense, it's just the thing that I think is like consistently the best thing about the Minnesota Vikings. And I think it seems as though they really haven't skipped a beat. I mean, maybe they're not as formidable and maybe they're not as sexy as the Bears were last year, but it seems like it's just consistently the most good thing about that team. Like, is that like a fair assessment, Arif?
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. You know, 2014, it was a pretty poor defense. Mike Zimmer takes it over, and you take a look at a statistic like DVOA, they improve year over year over year until about 2017, they're the top defense in the NFL. 2018, they take a bit of a dip. 2019, they seem like they're a pretty good defense again. You know, the analytic evidence suggests that defenses tend to regress. They don't repeat their performances. A top defense is not necessarily going to be the top defense the next year. And we see that with like the Ravens, for example. We saw that with the Jaguars in 2017, but that isn't true for the Vikings that have just consistently remained a top defense. So I think, you know, that's kind of a curiosity. A lot of it has to do with the fact that they've had more consistency on the defense than I think a lot of defenses have over the years. And so they've kind of avoided the regression bug, as it were.
Yeah, I'm sure Jeremy has plenty of questions about the defense because he's secretly the biggest Minnesota Vikings fan there is.
Well, I think it's just fascinating to me that, especially from the Lions' point of view, that they never seem to have figured out this Vikings defense. I don't think they've scored more than 23 points in regulation against the Vikings since Zimmer's been in town. And so I guess my question is simply, like, has anything changed, or is it just business as usual in terms of personnel, in terms of scheme? Is there anything different about this defense this year?
I mean, the scheme tends to change fairly gradually. If you take a look at schematically what it was in 2014 and schematically what it is now, it looks a lot different. You know, mm-hmm. they use a little bit less in terms of match coverage principles, you know, where you've got the man coverage inside a zone. They've switched between cover three to cover four a lot more often. Yeah. So you'll see, you know, two high safeties covering, you know, smaller deep zones. They've stopped, you know, doing a ton of double A gap blitz stuff, but that doesn't mean they've stopped mugging gaps. You know, they've instead kind of occupied B gaps or C gaps. And so they've remained with the same kind of core consistent principles, which is to kind of play individual receivers within those zones and then also force one-on-one matchups on the offensive line while still kind of maybe rushing four. But the way they've done those has changed a lot. They play more press coverage now, or at least they try to. Sometimes the corners kind of audible themselves out of it, but they try to play more press coverage than they've done in the past. But honestly, the core of the defense, philosophically speaking, kind of remains the same, where they sell out a little bit more against the pass than the run, even though, again, Mike Zimmer talks about stopping the run all the time. The actions on the field seem to indicate that he's very concerned about the pass much more than the run. They like one-on-one matchups on the offensive line. There's a bunch of different ways they do it. They've changed what the safeties do. It used to be just kind of, you know, either Anderson Dejo or Harrison Smith is going to drop in the box and kind of screw things up. Now, both Anthony Harrison and Harrison Smith can be deep, or both of them can be kind of rolled up to the line of scrimmage. So schematically a lot different, philosophically very, very much the same.
All right, we're running up against the end of this first segment, but let's talk injuries really quick. I was talking to you off air about just how phenomenal it is for the Vikings to not have an exhaustive list already this early in the season. It looks like really the only things to be concerned about are Josh Klein, Riley Reiff, two starters on that offensive line, but they seem to be trending in the right direction. Do you expect both of those guys to play this week?
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I guess I'm not sure that either of them will end up playing. You know, obviously, you know, this is a divisional matchup. They'll want to get them ready to play as soon as possible. But, you know, the injury report is, like you said, it's been trending in the right direction. Josh Klein is limited as opposed to, you know, last year he was out. Riley Reiff moved from, you know, did not participate on Wednesday to limited on Thursday. So that's good news, but I don't know if that's enough to say, for example, that they'll play. It'd be really great if they did. I know that kind of the next thing on the show notes is to ask kind of how confident are you in the backups? And yeah, despite how well they played last week, the backups, Rashad Hill in particular, but both of them, I think, kind of played above their pay grade. Over the course of time, they have not consistently demonstrated that ability. So it'd be good for the Vikings if both of them played. Like you said, you know, Riley Reiff's ankle, which, you know, forced him to miss some time. He tried to come back and then he missed more time last week. You know, that's going to be something that I expect is more likely to come back than Josh Klein, even though Josh Klein has practiced a little bit more, just because, you know, that foot injury seemed a little bit more serious. But we'll see.
All right, great. Thanks, Arif. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, as always, we're going to talk some matchups. We're going to talk some predictions. And I'm going to tease maybe a new segment, see how it works with Arif. So stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, we are back with First Bite, our concluding segment on Lions versus Vikings. Week 7, big NFC matchup, second in a row for the Detroit Lions. Both teams are looking for the first NFC North win. This is going to be a big game for both, obviously. I want to start the second segment with a new segment, and we'll see if it works out or not. We obviously kind of get in our own heads here in Detroit. We get our own perception of what the team is. But we don't really get an opportunity that often to see what other people think of this team and what, you know, their perception of the Lions, where they rank maybe in the NFL and what they do well, what they don't do well. And I think this is a good week to start this segment because, Arif, I always seem to see one tweet of yours per year or maybe every like 2, 3, 4 weeks where you're just like, you're very complimentary of the Lions. And I don't see that a lot on Twitter from people outside of Detroit. Even a couple weeks ago, you said the Lions, the best team in the NFC North. And that may have been at least a little bit tongue in cheek, but it seems like you're pretty high on this Lions team pretty consistently over the last couple of years. I know we're a couple of weeks away after you put out that tweet, but what's your overall thoughts on this Lions team looking from, you know, a Vikings perspective?
Yeah, no, when I did tweet that out, it was a little tongue-in-cheek. I thought there was like a little bit of truth to, you know, what was behind the tweet, but I thought it was just kind of funny because no one ever thinks of the Lions as, you know, competitors in the NFC North. But yeah, no, I think they've got, you know, the horses to be the best team in the NFC North right now. Obviously, they're at the bottom of the standings through some chicanery. I won't talk about it too much.
appreciate
but,
that.
I think that, you know, they've got an argument for having the best quarterback in the NFC North. So obviously, you know, Stafford's better than Trubisky. That's not particularly close. in terms of situational football, obviously, I would trust Stafford a lot more than Cousins based off of, you know, my description of Cousins. Mm-hmm. Stafford, you know, set a record for comebacks a couple of seasons ago. And while we haven't seen that again, you know, we do know that he has the ability to kind of perform in high leverage situations. And he's been playing better football than I recall seeing, even that 41 touchdown season, you know, quite a while ago. I think that the type of football he's playing or the consistency with which he's playing is better than I've ever seen it. And so that, I think, drives a lot of it. When you take a look at the Lions defense, I think it's really underrated. They played four really high level quarterbacks the last, you know, 5 weeks. Was it like Aaron Rodgers, Phillip Rivers, Carson Wentz? You know, I don't have a ton of respect for, but he's been playing pretty well. And yeah, someone else that's like a really high level quarterback.
Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah. Pretty decent, I guess. and I believe this was before Mahomes' ankle injury too. So, you know, the type of football that Mahomes has been playing these last 2 weeks is not quite the same. And so for the Lions to do as well as they did, I think that the raw defensive numbers don't tell us the full story just because of the quality of offenses they've played against. Now, obviously, the Arizona game was kind of a disaster, but I think the rest of the games have been really good from a defensive perspective. And that secondary is really underrated. Justin Coleman, who was briefly on the Vikings roster, unfortunately, has been playing really lights out. He's playing, I think, maybe even better than Darius Slay, who's always been playing pretty well. So, you know, you'd like to see more pressure from that front four in terms of the kinds of things they can do in the passing game. You'd like to see, you know, the best nose tackle in the NFL, you know, get more run stops than he's been getting. Yep. But, you know, and the run defense overall has been, I think, a little bit more suspect. But I think the most important thing for a defense is to have good coverage. And I think the Lions have it. So there's a lot there, I think, to respect.
Well, let's start right there with the coverage and let's go right into the matchups now. You mentioned earlier that Kirk Cousins has struggled kind of disproportionately against good pass defenses. The Lions have a pretty good secondary, as you mentioned. They've held some pretty good quarterbacks in check. Do you think that's a favorable matchup for the Lions this week, even though, as we mentioned, the Vikings have a pretty darn good duo of receivers themselves?
Yeah, it'll be kind of interesting to see how that turns out because, you know, when I first kind of noticed this, but particularly about his play this year, it was right before the Eagles game, and the Eagles had kind of the opposite, where they've got this really great, extraordinary pass rush and a really poor secondary. Yeah. And the final numbers turned out to be kind of average for them heading into the game. A lot of it, you know, benefited from getting to play Luke Falk's Jets. But, you know, the Vikings kind of diced them apart. And so I think that's a good indication that maybe the pass rush matters a little bit less than the secondary does when it comes to Kirk Cousins. And, you know, the analytics people will say also generally too. And so here you've got kind of the inverse where you've got a pretty good secondary, kind of a confusing coverage, not like, you know, crazy confusing, but you don't see a ton of teams drop eight like the Lions do all the time.
Right.
And so, you know, like I said, Cousins is kind of a textbook quarterback. And so if it's not, you know, in the book, you know, maybe he doesn't know what to do. In terms of the individual matchups, you know, I think the world of Thielen and Diggs, and so I do think that they'll win those individual matchups more often than not. I think, despite kind of the praise I've had for Darius Slay and Justin Coleman, you know, I think that especially, you know, when Thielen's got Coleman in the slot or something, I think that they'll win those matchups. They're just so talented. And it takes someone like a Jalen Ramsey or Patrick Peterson or something like that to really kind of take him out of the game. Even Jair Alexander, you know, he had a pretty good game, but I think, you know, on the all 22, you know, Thielen and Diggs do get open against him a little bit more often than you'd expect. So it's really about Cousins' ability to kind of close on what are going to end up being tighter windows. He's taken a lot less aggressive throws, as kind of identified by Next Gen Stats, where they look at how tight the windows are. He's done a lot less of that this year, but a lot of it just has to do with the fact that Thielen and Diggs have been just like obscenely open, which they won't be this year. In this game, they'll be probably open. And so he'll have to make those tight window throws. So it's really about Cousins' comfort with those throws, where he hasn't had to make those throws in a while. So we'll see. I'm not super optimistic about it. I think the Vikings in some books opened as pick'ems, some books opened as 1-point favorites. I think that's all been bet down to 1.5-point favorites. So there's a reason this game is close, despite the fact that the Vikings numbers so far this year have been pretty extraordinary. And I think some of it has to do with that matchup.
Yeah, and I think the biggest matchup of all, though, is one that we've already kind of touched on a little bit, but I think we could even discuss it a little bit further. But it's Dalvin Cook, and it's Dalvin Cook against the Lions' run defense, which you have already mentioned, Arif, is not really performing up to snuff. It's not the unit that it was last year, especially after the Lions traded a fifth-round pick to get Snacks Harrison. And I think if you're looking at this game and you're wondering, well, which matchup are the Vikings going to most likely try to exploit? And I think it's run the football. And I think it's something that they can do when they come to Ford Field. And I think it's something that will really put a wrench into whatever it is the Lions are planning on doing, both offensively and defensively. You talk about how the Lions really like to, you know, rush 3, drop 8, and that could potentially cause problems for Kirk Cousins. Well, one of those ways that you combat that is maybe, hello, halfback draw. Hello, Dalvin Cook, gashing you for 5 or 6 yards a carry, and that'll have the Lions, I think, up in arms pretty quickly. Do you foresee like a heavy dose of Dalvin Cook? Because there have been a couple games where you mentioned maybe the Bears game, the ground game wasn't going. I think he only had 14 carries against Philadelphia. It was a game that they had in hand, but only had 14 carries. Do you think this could be like a 25, 26 yard or 26, 27 carries for Dalvin Cook type of game?
Yeah, I think they'll go into this game planning to run the ball a little bit more than they usually do, which again says a lot because they're a pretty run-heavy team. I think Dalvin Cook in particular, man, those linebackers are not great.
Well, it depends. It depends on who you're talking to, because apparently, I mean, if you're a Senior Bowl participant, yeah, you really think that Jared Davis is one of the best linebackers in football, and he's seen comment. The tape. So
that was quite the tweet, but based off of what I've seen, I've not been particularly impressed. I mean, they're better in run defense than they are in coverage, but they're not particularly great neither. And so I would expect them to run the ball a little bit more. Now, again, they like to respond to the flow of the game. They like to run the ball when they're ahead, throw the ball when they're behind. But even when they're behind, like against the Packers, for example, they were down 21-0 in the second quarter, and they were still willing to kind of run the ball. And part of it's because they were getting 7.7 yards a carry. But part of it's just, you know, that's kind of how Zimmer's wired and how he wants his offensive coordinators to call plays. So I do think that they will run the ball a lot more than they did against the Bears and a lot more than they did against the Eagles, especially with Dalvin Cook, who I think his skill set in particular would cause fits for both Tavai and Davis, just because, you know, he's a shifty, quicker guy. So I really do think that they'll try to get him the ball in a bunch of different ways. I wouldn't be surprised if it comes through screens, if it comes through checkdowns, you know, with, you know, him running angle routes through the linebacker zone, or if it is just to kind of run the ball and try to beat, you know, those linebackers to the point of attack. So, yeah, I do expect more of a Dalvin Cook kind of game than other games where, you know, the Vikings might have an even matchup or might be favored. Because, again, the Eagles, I mean, that's a pretty poor secondary. It's banged up. That was kind of an easy situation to attack, whereas with the Lions, I think here it's the linebackers and the suspect run defense that is going to be the focus.
That makes a lot of sense. Let's move over to when the Lions have the ball. As I mentioned before, they've notoriously had not quite a lot of success against this Vikings defense. And as we mentioned, the changes they've made has been gradual, if anything. But one thing that seems to be kind of curious this year is the play of the corners, which hasn't been up to snuff, I would say. Xavier Rhodes' stats aren't too impressive for a Xavier Rhodes kind of season. I've personally never been a fan of Trey Waynes, but that might have to do with my Michigan bias. what's your kind of outlook on the Vikings corners this year and how they match up against a pretty good set of receiving options in Detroit?
Yeah, I would say that Rhodes has been playing better than advertised this year.
Okay.
You know, people will, you know, throw darts at him for games where he gives up like three receptions. And, you know, one of those receptions is like a 35-yard touchdown. It's not nothing, but like three receptions, that's not bad. Like, right. It's not, you know, where he was in 2017, but it's not bad. And, you know, the games where he's given up the most yardage, I think, you know, for example, PFF, I think, was incorrect to assign him, you know, the 39-yard pass to Devontae Adams and the 14-yard pass to Evan Engram. And so you take a look at those and you say, well, you know, hey, some of these statistics, you know, maybe they don't bear out. And then you take a look at, you know, something else like Sport Radar, you know, they've got, you know, chip tracking and they try to identify coverages and, you know, they don't have Rhodes giving up those yardage. So I would say, you know, he's not playing up to his contract. His contract kind of requires him to play at a near elite level and he's not doing that because, you know, you give up one big play every two games, you know, that's the cornerback position. You're not elite. Right. You know, he's not playing up to that, but I do think that he's playing above average. I don't think they'll shadow him. They haven't shadowed him for the past couple of weeks. And so, you know, they kind of like the right side, left side stuff, which they did a lot in 2014, a little bit in 2015. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, how he matches up against Kenny Golladay, you know, I don't know. You know, Golladay is certainly faster than Rhodes is. Rhodes is no longer the 4.42 guy he was coming out of the draft. But I think that from a technique versus technique perspective, Rhodes has an advantage. I think Golladay is physically just kind of just a better player. And so kind of what the push pull there is going to matter a lot. I think, you know, Stafford's ability to put the ball in kind of unique situations for his receivers that, you know, cornerbacks don't have access to, that's going to be pretty important. And then Trey Waynes, I've never been a huge fan of Trey Waynes either. But he's been playing really well these past 2 years. For him, the issue is a lot less about, you know, placing himself in the right spot in coverage and more kind of how to play the receiver once the ball arrives, whether or not it's turning his head around or getting his hands inside the hands of opposing receivers. And so he'll create these tight windows, which is very valuable in itself, but he won't kind of do much beyond that. Plus, statistically, he's been helped out a lot, too. He's been helped out by, you know, a Sterling Shepard drop, a Zach Ertz drop. He's been helped out by Alshon Jeffrey just deciding to step out of bounds 3 yards downfield instead of housing it. And so, statistically, you know, Waynes looks a lot better than Rhodes. But when you kind of account for some of these individual differences in terms of who gets assigned what, I think Rhodes statistically does look better than Waynes after you kind of adjust it for, you know, and maybe it's my perceived biases, who knows. But they're both playing at kind of this above average level where I think Waynes is kind of getting a little overrated and Rhodes is getting a little underrated. And I think Rhodes is certainly the best corner on the team, but neither of them, I think, are living up to the expectations that the rest of the defense is setting because that rest of the defense is playing just out of their minds.
Right.
And so for Rhodes and Waynes to, relatively speaking, kind of struggle, it's very easy to kind of point fingers at them. And then you've got Mike Hughes and Mackenzie Alexander, who are both playing, like, fantastically, and so that raises questions, too.
Right. I feel like we've gotten to the part of the show where we've avoided this topic as long as possible, but we have to talk about it because it's the Lions versus Vikings matchup. But is there any chance that the Lions can stop this pass rush? Because they haven't been able to do it in the past. Matthew Stafford has gotten beaten the hell up in this rivalry like crazy.
Yeah,
tell me there's something that's going to stop him this week. That Everson Griffin is just like tired or something.
It's fascinating because last year, Everson was having just an awful season. But he turns up for one game, and it's the Lions game. Seems to have a pretty good day.
Yeah.
This year, Griffin is playing almost as well, if not better, than he did in 2017, which was the year, the first half of the season where he was getting at least, he was getting one sack a game plus more, right? So he's averaging more than a sack a game, 1.3. And he was in the defensive player of the year conversation before he kind of hurt his foot. Now he's playing at a really high level. He's not getting the sacks, but that's because quarterbacks are throwing quicker than they ever have been against the Vikings. And part of that's, you know, you play Derek Carr, he just gets rid of the ball quickly. Chase Daniel just gets rid of the ball quickly. And so they've been able to beat these offensive tackles, but they haven't been able to turn those into pressures or sacks as much as they should be able to. They still both have really good pressure numbers. I think they're both in the top 10 at their position. You know, Stafford's been holding on the ball slightly longer this year than he has the past 4 years. He's always been getting rid of the ball a little bit quicker than average. Despite the fact that he likes to kind of throw it downfield, he's throwing it downfield a lot more this year, and I think that might be the reason. But that fact might be a problem with regards to how Danielle Hunter and Everson Griffin are playing, because they're both playing the best football of their career. And, you know, I mean, football is weird. They might just end up with like zero sacks in this game, and that's just kind of how it goes. But I would say you're probably set up for at least a three sack, maybe not 10, which happened twice, I think. But
it was like 10 and a 7 in this rivalry in the past couple of years. It's
it's brutal.
You are not giving me the answer that I was hoping for. Not that I expected anything else. I was just hoping
they're playing so well. It's not setting up for that. Plus, Ricky Wagner's not playing the level he should be. So
no, he certainly isn't. All right, let's get onto the prediction portion. We call it the one thing I think I know, where you just kind of give any prediction, doesn't necessarily have to be a score prediction, just something you think is going to happen on Sunday. While you think about it, Arif, I'm going to throw it to Ryan. What's the one thing you think you know about this Lions-Vikings matchup on Sunday?
Damn it. We've made it almost 40 minutes through this podcast, but I'm going to have to do it anyways. The one thing I think I know is that the Lions are going to have less penalties than the Minnesota Vikings. Looking at their stats from this season, Minnesota's pretty up there in terms of total flags. Right now, through six games, they have 61 total flags against them, 21 at home, but 27 on the road. Ooh. All right. They're averaging about 10.1 flags per game. The Lions, on the other hand, are averaging about 10.4 flags per game, but they've only been penalized 16 times at home. So of those 52 flags, quite a few of them are coming on the road. So I think at home, the Lions are going to be less penalized after... Man, after what? Monday sucked.
Did something happen?
I don't know what you're talking about. So you're saying they're due? They've built up goodwill.
Well, I mean that's historically that's borne out for the Lions. I think that's fair.
Well, so you're saying Rod Wood has this much pull in his conversations with the league that he's gonna get calls in his favor this week.
I'm never gonna give Rod Wood credit for anything.
Yeah, gonna say that's giving him way too much credit.
I will give him zero credit for anything. I will give the backlash that occurred on social media and the fact that the NFL had to come out and Troy Vincent had to say, they blew that second call for sure. I think that there might be a little home cooking. And I just think that Minnesota is going to be flagged more times than Detroit. And also I feel like that's kind of a safe bet to make as well, just because I think Ford Field will be loud. And I think that there's the opportunity for false start penalties and things like that. I'm just trying to talk myself into this becoming a reality because, like I said, Monday sucked. And
all right, I should have cut you off long ago.
Thank you.
But yeah, we haven't had you on the podcast for a while, so we needed you.
I needed the pull. I needed the pull.
All right, Arif, what's the one thing you think you know about Sunday's game?
this is tough.
Oh no.
No. This is going to be a positive for Detroit. I think one thing I think I know is that Cousins will fumble the ball and Trey Flowers will probably pick it up. And if it's not Trey Flowers, it'll be Justin Coleman in a revenge game, as it were. He's among the league leaders in fumbles. The Vikings are, you know, and fumble luck is a thing, right? So maybe that's not like real, but The Vikings seem to be pretty poor at recovering fumbles, especially when they occur behind the line of scrimmage. I know A'shaun Robinson has recovered one or two fumbles this year. Mm-hmm. It just feels like, you know, it's going to be one of those games where, you know, divisional game, he seems to fumble a little bit more. Maybe that's not a real thing. But man, I am totally positive he's going to fumble.
I think the Lions are among the league leaders in forced fumbles, and they've already eclipsed the number that they had last year. And like you said, I think fumble luck plays a big part in that, but it is something that to keep an eye on, I think, for this matchup. But now that we've had two semi-positive things about this matchup, let me get to the one thing I think I know, and it's not good. I think this is a horrible matchup for the Lions. I think they lose this game definitively. I think it's going to be ugly. And the one thing I think I know is that people are going to blame it on the hangover game. They're going to create this narrative that the Lions weren't focused, that they were still focused on being hated on the refs on Monday night, and none of that matters. None of that is actually true. I think it's just a bad matchup for the Lions this week, and they've struggled with this Vikings team forever. And so, yeah, the one thing I think I know is that the Lions lose, and people are going to attribute something that wasn't actually the reason why they lost.
But
sorry,
Jeremy, I don't know why you would say that when Matt Patricia came out and said, "I just want the fans to know that we're going to work to get things right, to do things the right way. We're tough. We're built tough. We're blue collar, just like the city and just like the state. We'll continue to be tough. In the end, right. Toughness is going to prevail."
Okay. We have run way too long. But I want to give Arif the last word here. Where can people find your stuff, Arif? What kind of stuff can they expect out of you this week that Lions fans might be interested in?
Yeah, you can find me at Arif Hassan NFL. On Twitter. That's really the only social media I have. That's ARIFHASAN NFL. You can find me on The Athletic at theathletic.com/author/Arif-Hassan. That's where all my stuff is. You could find my podcasts, Football Machine, Norse Code. Sometimes I do the Straight Cash podcast at The Athletic too. Type my name into stuff if you really want to find it. There's not a ton of people with my name, so you'll find it.
Plug the Wide Left podcast. Do it.
I haven't recorded in like a month, but yeah, if you want my crazy political takes that are going to get me in jail at some point, you can follow the Wide Left podcast, which I think is at Wide Left Podcast, and also one of like the two Wide Left podcasts on the iTunes search engine.
There you go. Arif, appreciate you joining us. Ryan, I appreciate you joining us, and I forgot to plug your Twitter, Ryan_POD. I think I got that right.
Where you can find gradient photos of my dog and myself being likened to Sharon Stone.
who doesn't want that? Thank you for listening, everybody. As a reminder, Pride of Detroit's podcast, our normal podcast, we record it live now on our Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Pride of Detroit, 8 p.m. We're going back to 8 p.m. on Sundays. Now that the game is on Sundays again, we'll be live again talking about Lions Vikings. Be sure to go over there, give us a follow so you get notifications, all that sort of stuff. And you'll still be able to get the podcast on all the things that you're currently listening to this podcast on. So appreciate you all joining us. You guys have a great weekend. Hopefully we'll have a good Sunday game to talk about, 8 p.m. Twitch.tv/Pride Detroit. Love you all.